Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
You had a good Christmas?
Yes.
Good. So today's message is about celebrating the last 12 months, being thankful for what God has done in our lives, and looking ahead to the next 12 months. Every time I sat down to write the message, there's been one thought that has kept standing out to me, and that is, life is short. Now that statement may not seem synonymous with celebration. It can come across a little bit moody, but God has repeatedly brought me to this thought. Can you believe that another year has gone by? Life seems to go by so fast. Put your hand up if you'd agree with that. Pretty much everyone. And I've heard people say, the older you get, the quicker it seems to go by.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, have you had a good year?
Yeah.
Good. Think about the last 12 months as a whole. What is the overriding emotion that comes to mind? Do you have good memories or bad ones? Has it been a tough year, a stressful year, or a busy year? It's probably been busy for a lot of us. And there's two questions that I'd like us to ask ourselves. First, what have you done within the last year? And then second, what could you have done within the last year? Did you use the opportunities that God gave you? Did you help others, give to others? Have you grown? Are you more like Jesus than at this time last year? Now, I'd like you to imagine a length of tape going the whole length of this hall. In fact, we can only see it within the hall, but imagine that it goes on forever. Just try and visualize that length of tape. Now, that length of tape represents time. It's eternal. If I was to mark it with a pen, just a little mark, you probably couldn't even see it. And that little mark represents our whole life on earth. That's how small our life is in relation to the whole of time. Due to our human nature, we can only see the little mark. We think that's the whole thing. We live simply for that little mark, but we need to live in light of the whole thing, live for eternity, and make our lives matter. We only have one life and one chance to make a difference for Jesus. One day, we will have to give an account to God for our lives, for the choices we made, for what we did with the things that God gave us. There are two great people in the Bible that both understood how short their time on earth was. They wanted to make their lives matter. Moses wrote Psalm 90, and in verse 12, he said, "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And David wrote Psalm 39. In verse 4, he said, "Show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is." So why did both of them want to number their days? Does it matter if we know how long we'll live for? Well, they didn't want to depress themselves. Rather, they wanted God to humble them so they could be inspired to really make their lives matter and to make a difference. It doesn't really matter whether we know exactly how long we've got left in this life, but it does matter that we live for Jesus, that we live every day to the fullest, and we give our all for him, that we make a difference. There are so many people who've been inspired to make a difference only after they have started to live outside of themselves. Unfortunately, too often, it is only after something bad happens that people start to live in this way. It takes something big to kickstart them, to really inspire them. So, what inspires you? Nothing is bigger than Jesus, so he should be enough to inspire us. We'll look at what Jesus said about using what God has given you. But first, I want to briefly talk about someone who challenged me this last year. You may have heard his story. It's a teenager called Stephen Sutton. He was diagnosed with cancer, and he created a bucket list. He started doing as much as he could with the time that he had left. His main focus was to fundraise for the Teenage Cancer Trust so that others in a similar situation to him could be helped. He focused on fundraising and he spread a message of positivity throughout his illness. His aim was to raise £10,000 for Teenage Cancer Trust in the time that he had left. Now, Stephen passed away in May this year, but he managed to raise his target. In fact, he managed to raise a lot more than the £10,000 he first aimed for. His actual total fundraising to date is well over £4 million. His illness is what inspired him to leave a legacy. He decided to change the world, and he did that. His story impacted a lot of people. I'm just going to watch a very brief clip of Stephen.
And our next speaker is a teenager who knows really all too much about cancer. I am not going to tell you his story because he does it so well himself. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a very warm welcome for an amazing young man, Stephen Sutton.
His focus and drive and passion and thirst for life, I just find absolutely staggering. And his desire, his genuine desire to help other people who are in difficult situations as well, is an absolute inspiration.
I do not know how long I've got left to live. But one of the reasons for that is because I haven't asked. And you know, and that's because I don't see the point in measuring life in terms of time anymore. I would rather measure it in terms of what I actually achieve, you know? I'd rather measure it in terms of making a difference, which I think is a much more valid and pragmatic measure.
I don't want to be remembered as someone who didn't fulfill their potential. My original goal was to become a doctor and to help others that way. Unfortunately, my diagnosis means that I won't be able to fulfill that dream. However, my core purpose of helping others is still the same.
You can't give me your time to make me live longer, but what I can try and do is to give you a bit of my motivation, you know, to go out there and achieve something, to go out there and help others, to go out there and enjoy life, to continue the work of a foundation. I'm going to say once more, to make a difference.
He was an inspiration for many people. And his story has challenged me, because how much more positive should I be? I know Jesus, and I shouldn't wait until my days are numbered. I should start now. I could have done more within the last year for Jesus, and I want to do more over the next 12 months. Do we value every day as a gift from God? Do we wake up in the morning and pray and commit our day to really make a difference for God and for his kingdom? If you've brought your Bibles, can you turn to Matthew 25? And we're going to read and listen to verse 14 to 30.
Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share with your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents, and see, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will then have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. and throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
There's a lot to take in from this parable. Firstly, the master's going away and he calls his servants to him. The Greek word for servants here is actually bond servants. In Jewish culture at the time, bond servants were usually servants who were voluntarily serving their master. Deuteronomy 15 explains that a Jewish slave would serve for 6 years and actually become free in the seventh year, but a bond servant chose to remain as a servant for life. It's in Exodus 21, verse 5 to 6. It says, "But if the servant declares, 'I love my master and my wife and children, and do not want to go free,' then his master must take him before the judges. He shall take him to the door or the doorpost and pierce his ear with an awl. Then he will be his servant for life." If the servant loves the master so much, then they sacrifice their freedom and remain a slave forever. By giving their lives to the master, they truly honour him. This parable applies to us today. We're the servants in this story, and Jesus is the master. But I do need to point out the difference between us and the bondservant. A bondservant may give up their freedom to serve their master, but when we choose to give our lives to God, we gain freedom rather than sacrifice it. The servants are called by their master, and every one of us has a calling. We're called to follow God, called to witness for God, called to use all that God has given to us for him. Ephesians 4:4-6 says, "There is one body and one spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all." So God is over our calling. He works through it and he's in it. It is so important to make it worthwhile, to make our lives matter. Romans 11:29 says that God's gifts and his call are irrevocable. God's call in the parable is singular rather than plural. Some people feel clear as to their specific calling and others are not so clear. But you know, our calling is not a small aspect of our lives. We're not meant to just serve God in a small part of our life. Our calling is our whole life. So it's singular because we have one life. Whatever we do in life, that is a part of our calling. Our day-to-day work, family life, our interaction with other people. Everything we do is a part of our calling to follow Jesus. So whatever we do, we should give it our best and do it for God. Even the simplest of tasks can be done as an act of worship to God. In the parable, the master gave one servant 5 talents, another 2, and another just 1. To each according to his ability. The master knows his servants. He will have observed the servants. He knows their ability and has given according to their passion, their faithfulness, and how trustworthy they are. So our responsibility is tied to our ability. God provides the talents. They're not ours. God has given them to us, and everyone was given a talent. Nobody was left out. Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." Do you act as if everything belongs to God? Everything you have, everything you see, even other people? If you haven't thought of other people being God's possession before, would you now treat them differently? It's an interesting thought. There are probably times when I haven't treated people or things with the appreciation that they require as they belong to God. We all have talents. We're given different gifts and talents, and some more than others, based on our ability. But don't worry about what other people's talents are. It matters more what we do with the talents that God has given us. And the more you give to God, the more God gives you. Most scholars believe that a talent was the equivalent to 20 years' wages. So these servants were given a lot. God gave his son for you. God has given you salvation. There is no greater gift that you could receive. You know, it may seem strange for a bondservant who has potentially given up his freedom to serve his master to simply waste the talent. A bondservant should care about his master. So it is somewhat contradictory to just bury the talent and appear not to care. It's like you given £500,000 today, and you just left it there in the bank, just left it there without even putting it in the bank to gain interest. That is a lack of care about the person who has entrusted that responsibility to you. So let's look at some differences between the servants in this parable. The first two were determined to make a profit. The third was determined to not take a loss. The first two were willing to work hard and take risks. The third took no risks. The first two received the gift. The third refused the gift. The first two wanted to advance the master's kingdom. The third had no interest in what mattered to the master. The first two viewed the money as an opportunity. The third viewed it as a problem. The first two invested. The third one wasted. The first two saw a blessing, and the third saw a burden. So do you consider this servant as wicked? Do you think it is a sin for him to bury the talent? Maybe you think the master was a bit harsh. He left 8 talents with the servants and came back to 15. That is a healthy profit. At least the third servant didn't lose the talent. And it was normal practice at the time to bury money to keep it safe. James 4:17 says, "If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them." It's a serious verse. God will judge not only for people doing wrong, but for people not doing right. We can also be a contradiction at times. We can love God, really love him, yet waste talents and opportunities that God has made available to us. Sometimes there can be sin in inaction as well as action. The servant who had 5 talents gained an extra 5. And the servant given 2 accrued another 2. The master said to them, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." How amazing will it be to hear God say that to you? "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." God gives us free will, and even in this, we have the choice. God doesn't say, "Here is the joy of the master," or "Receive the joy of the master." God says, "Enter into it." We have a choice. We can choose to enter into the joy of God. It required action to multiply the talents in the first place, and then action to move into the joy of the Lord. Are you a person of action for God? So many people don't fully commit their lives to God due to fear. The servant who buried the talent said, "I was afraid and I went and hid your talent in the ground." I've read this parable so many times, but God revealed something to me in this. The servant's response to the master is similar to when Adam sinned in the Garden of Eden. Adam says to God, "I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid." The servant was afraid, so hid the talent. Adam was afraid, so tried to hide from God. You know, fear causes us to hide away. It prevents us reaching our potential. Is fear holding you back? Are there areas of your life that you have buried and tried to hide away from God? Are there talents that you aren't using for God? There are 2 main types of fear in the Bible. The first is a fear of the Lord, which is beneficial to us. It is not fear in the sense of a phobia, but rather a reverence and awe of God. It is true acknowledgement of who God is. It is really knowing God and never reducing your view of him. Proverbs 14:27 says, "The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, to turn one away from the snares of death." And Psalm 111:10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. To him belongs eternal praise." The second type of fear is detrimental to us. It probably comes more naturally to us than the other. This is the type of fear that both the servant in this parable and Adam displayed. It's self-centeredness, a worry about yourself more than others. We can often be fearful. We can worry about things, fear what people think, fear losing things. This fear binds us. It prevents us from growing whereas fear of the Lord releases us and frees us to grow. It's in 2 Timothy 1:7. It says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." And 1 John 4:18 says, "There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." The servant and Adam had lost their love for God, which led to disobedience, which led to fear and sin and separation from God. A.W. Tozer said, "The most important thing about you is what you think about God. And it's true that your view of God will filter how you view everything." There's another parallel to the account of the fall in Genesis to this parable. And that's when the servant approaches the master. He says, "I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and hid your talent in the ground." He says, because you are a hard man. He tries to justify his actions by deflecting the blame onto the master. And when Adam sinned in the Garden of Eden, he says to God, "The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree, and I ate it." Now, I've always thought Adam was trying to deflect the blame onto the woman in that statement, but he's actually placing the blame on God. Have you noticed that before? He said, "The woman you put here with me." Trying to blame God shows that their heart attitude towards him isn't what it should be. Eating from the forbidden tree and burying a talent may not be the worst of sins in themselves, but the main root of the sin is the attitude towards God. That shows in the way that Adam and the servant both attempt to blame God for their actions. That shows the extent to the cause of sin. This servant has sinned in his actions. The master is certainly justified in calling his servant wicked. You know, the master probably wouldn't have been angry, even if the servant had lost the talent. If he invested it and it didn't work out, at least he'd have tried. There are times that we may step out of our comfort zone for God, and because we're human, we will often make mistakes. But God rewards the motive rather than the outcome. God knows our motive, as he knew the motive of Adam and of the servant in this story. We can choose to be the servant who uses the talents that God has given us, or we can simply bury them. We have the choice whether to enter into the joy of the Lord. You know, there have been so many examples where this church has wisely used the talents that God has provided. There's so many outreaches from the cafe, the kids group, mission giving, giving up Christmas Day to serve those who are on their own. You don't need me to remind you of everything that you do. You know the sacrificial things you do week in and week out. So what have you done in the last year? A huge amount. What could you have done in the last year? Could you have done more? Take that thought and commit to give more of yourself to God. Use your talents wisely, bear fruit, and enter into the joy of the Master. Amen.